This is Rabbi Josh Yoder of the Stanton Street Shul. Thank you for downloading this class podcast. These classes are provided free of charge through the generosity of the Stanton Street Shul community and supporters like you. If you do enjoy them, please consider making a donation to our synagogue's building fund on our website's shop donate page at www.stantonstshul.com.
Good evening. It is Wednesday, December 5th, 2012. The current Jewish question that we'll be discussing today is the incredibly controversial topic of organ donation and the related issue, brain death. Out of curiosity, anyone hear about this issue before, think about this issue before? Any thoughts so far?
Well, I had a shear this summer at Pardes by the I don't remember his name, but the guy that runs the organization.
Yes, we'll get to them later. The Halachic Organ Donor Society,
that's the one,
also known as
HODES. Very uncomplicated name.
Yeah.
So he gave a whole shiur about basically sort of the hot questions of and easy to remember answers to those questions in like a very succinct, concise way.
Oh.
So he didn't bring too much halacha, like. It was a half an hour shear, so
right.
He wasn't really bringing a
Well,
lot
this
of
is an hour,
stuff.
So there's not that much more we can bring. All right, that's all right.
It
wonderful.
It was really fascinating to me, though, and he's got a whole list of really, you know, from Orthodox like rabbis that he's got.
Yes,
there on
I'm actually one of them. We'll get to that later. not one of the big ones, but I'm up there. You should actually know on the back of the sheet, I actually put down HODES' website because in addition to. You know, the sources here, they've got a lot more literature up there, including some really fascinating historical, one that I just, you know, was browsing along. They've got a letter from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik to Rabbi Mark Angel, and the letter basically said, to my knowledge, Rav Joseph B. Soloveitchik had no position on brain death, and that's one of the letters they have up there. So it's not just the point is they're not just trying to do propaganda if everyone agrees with us.
Yeah.
They've actually put together a fascinating repository. Actually got one of these sheets off of there too directly because you know, they had an image of it. I couldn't copy it into the source sheets, but you know everything that we do here is going to be up there.
Okay.
So the big question that you have with things like organ donation and brain death, in a sense, is you know, these are medical advancements which were completely unheard of at the time when Jewish law was really formulated and developed. And the way that Jewish law, you know, has to work is since we don't have a uniform court that can make such rulings today, anytime there's an innovation, especially scientific innovation, and there's a halachic ramification, you have to go back to pre-existing halachic sources. Because you have to somehow say, well, how does this fit in with, say, the Talmud? How does this fit in with the Bible or the biblical interpretation of the Talmud? And that can get really tricky. And that requires you to know two things. I mean, normally we just argue about Jewish law, and there's plenty on that too. With the scientific advancements, you have to know the science as well, right? And not only, so there's a whole other dimension then, and also try to figure out, well, even if you and I can agree on what Jewish law ought to be, not so simple there, is this new scientific innovation consistent with the halacha as we understand it? Or is it consistent with this halacha, or is it consistent with
Great.
Some other
That's
halacha?
That's my question. How do you find which thing is applicable?
That is the question. So some things we can do by analogy and some things we can't. Right? And some things you really just have to make the best guess. And what I wanted to do here is, since there is such a wealth of information up here, is I wanted to go through some of the primary sources as opposed to the secondary ones, because then, and there's so many later commentators that have an opinion one way or the other. There are also meta debates over, say, Rav Moshe Feinstein, meaning what did Rav Moshe Feinstein actually say? Forget about whether or not you agree or disagree, just you can find that. I want to try to skip all of those political side of things. All right, so fine. I also split this up into two sections. The first section I called live organ donation. And this refers to things like, let's say, donating a kidney.
Mm-hmm.
All right, because people can live without kidneys. We do live kidney donations not all the time. And there are a couple of interesting halachic questions here. Right, so the first one is an obligation from Leviticus 19:16. Ashley, can you read source number one?
Do not go about spreading slander among your people. Do not stand over the blood of your fellow. I am the Lord.
Right, and because I was small, take the next source. This is a Gemara in Sanhedrin 73a.
Whence do we know that if a man sees his neighbor drowning, mauled by beast, or attacked by robbers, is he bound to save him? From the verse, thou shalt not stand by the blood of thy neighbor, but is it derived from this verse? Is it not rather from elsewhere? Viz. Whence do we know that one must save his neighbor from the loss of himself? From the verse, and thou shalt restore him to himself. From that verse, I might think that it is only a personal obligation, and that he is not bound to take the trouble of hiring men if he cannot deliver himself. Therefore, this verse teaches that he must.
Yeah, so here, you not only have an obligation save someone, but if you don't save someone when you have the opportunity, you've actually violated a negative biblical prohibition. Right? Now that's pretty, you know, that's a pretty significant prohibition there. Right? So according to this, come on in. So according to this, if you, you know, when it comes to donate a kidney, sorry, we just did the first couple of sources here on live donations.
Okay.
You pass that down. You open up a chair and you pass this over here. Thanks. All right. So, where was I? So according to this, right, live organ donation. I have a kidney. Someone else needs a kidney. I have a biblical obligation to save someone's life, and if I don't, I violate a negative prohibition. Based on this rationale, shouldn't we have an obligation as Jews to line up line outside NYU Hospital, Cornell, Columbia Presbyterian, wherever, and say, here, kidney, just go, take it, first one. Right. In fact, that actually, that happened with Alonzo Mourning, as I recall. You remember, basketball player? When it was announced, he used to play for the Nets. I think he retired from the Nets, then he was on the Heat. And when he retired from the Nets because of he needed a replacement kidney, people volunteered. Says, but isn't there a waiting list? Like, yeah, but if someone wants to give someone specifically a kidney, not a big deal. So he actually got one, probably because he was a celebrity, and so it was like, oh, I gave, gave Alonzo Mourning my kidney. But the reality is, a lot of people, are on waiting lists for a really long time. So the question is, do you have a halachic obligation to give an organ if it saves the other person's life? And if it's something like a kidney, right, you can live without one. I didn't include sources on this here. I actually put it in, it was in last week's on substance abuse. The other problem that we have is that there's actually a prohibition against self-harm, against injury. And the operative thing here, from the Talmud is... that someone is, obligated to save someone would only apply if someone, has the means to do so and doesn't. Do we consider giving an organ at the risk of, some amount of pain and some risk to be considered means? So, for example, unfortunate case in New York recently, I think it was last day or so, someone was pushed into the subway tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so what didn't get reported as much is he was in the tracks for about a minute before the train came. It's not like he was pushing the tracks, the train came, and that was it. He was in the track area for about a minute.
Someone took a picture of
him. Yes.
Why didn't anyone help him?
That's the question. And it doesn't really speak well of, the New Yorkers down there. Now, if you had the capacity to save that person, then sure. But let's say you didn't. Like, let's say, you happen to, be on crutches. Let's say you happen to be particularly weak and, aren't able to pull someone up. You wouldn't have that obligation because it's not within your capability to pull the guy up.
You would get
injured. Exactly. Or let's say, you happen to be in a wheelchair, right? You're not really going to be in a position that you can drag someone out from the subway tracks. If you could, yes. If not, no. All right? But what that means then is, there's a certain, as much as you like to say, like, yes, you have an obligation to save someone's life, what is the level, of, tircha, of trouble that we're going to expect you to do? According to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, like, you'd have to pay someone, right, to do it if you could, right? But what about you? So, like, there's assumed some monetary cost, and...
I didn't know that. That's horrible.
Yeah.
That's enough time to pull someone off a track.
That's, yeah. So the people who were there would have violated Amar al Damriyacha because they had the, well, for the ones who had the ability to do so. Again, I don't know every individual who was down there who saw, who noticed, right?
The guy that took the photo was far away and didn't get it. This is the photo that was the cover of the Post.
Ah, okay.
And he was, like, the photo's right as the train's coming.
So,
but
the point, you get the idea. I mean, I was not there, but the analogy still holds. So, the answers for various reasons that I found seems to be a consensus that no, one is not obligated to do so. Matt, could you take source number three? This is Igrot Moshe. This is Igrot Moshe Yoridea 2174.4. This is a response written by Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, dated July 15th, 1968.
In English?
Yes. Preferably? That's why it's there.
Okay. Regarding if there's an obligation to remove an organ to save the life of his friend, since there is a rabbinic disagreement on this, we do not obligate following the rabbi.
Meaning, I omitted here the citations, because it's been there's a discussion going past about the extent, so there happens to be a debate over this, and the Radbaz is the one who says that you do have an obligation, right? But it's, continue.
And it is beyond the scope to elaborate on his words.
Basically, it's too much to get into the details in this particular responsa.
And it seems that the reason is because of "do not stand by over the blood of your fellow."
That's the verse that we cited in Leviticus 19:16 in source number one.
So it's "do not stand."
That's the sort. I mean, it literally, it's, you know, "do not stand." Lo ta'amod al dam re'echa literally means "do not stand by" or "don't stand over the butt of your friend." Mm. Well, it's an idiom that doesn't translate that great. You see, literally it means
"do not stand on the
right" or "on" or "over." Right, by could also be the same. Like, it can have different. Look, literally, that's what it means. Idiomatically, it means "don't stand by while someone else is dying." Exactly.
"Do not stand by over the blood of your fellow" is like all prohibitions that one is obligated to spend all his money in order that he does not violate it, as we find in Ramah,
commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. So a rule is, when it comes to fulfilling a positive commandment, you spend up to 20% in order to fulfill it. So it comes up, for example, in, say, giving charity is 20%. If I'm remembering correctly, the amount of extra the maximum, I should say, that you can spend on an etrog that's super nice is, like, you know, 20%, you know, premium. However, if it's a lav, if it's actively violating a negative prohibition, then there's no limit to how much money you're supposed to spend. Now, here it's an odd prohibition, because normally when you say prohibition is you don't do something. Here, the thing that you're not doing is nothing. Meaning, when you're standing by, I know it sounds weird, right? Normally is, let's say, eating kosher, or eating non-kosher food. It's very easy to not eat non-kosher food. You just don't eat, right? You sitting right there, you're not eating non-kosher food. Yay, brownie points. See what I did there? Okay. But when it comes to, like, if there's someone who's, you know, drowning and you to go in and save them, right, you violate the negative prohibition by sitting there and doing nothing. Meaning the act of doing nothing is what violates the prohibition, as opposed to taking an action, right? Make a little more sense? Okay. That's what I mean. So continue in the Shach.
The Shach writes that if there's a danger of a loss of limb, it needs to be investigated if it's comparable to losing one's life or money, and he concludes leniently. And it seems the reason is that even the Ramah did not conclude that one has to donate an organ so as not to prevent violating a negative prohibition. This, it seems, that donation an organ is not an obligation, even when it is not dangerous to donate the organ.
So there are other opinions out there. It's just this is one that I had accessible. But Rav Moshe's argument seems to be, even if you want to say that lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, you know, applies, like, means you have to spend any amount of money, there's a very big difference between money and organ donation, right? Forget, like, health risks for a moment. There are other people that do say whatever health risks are there are, let's say, not there. How about this? The health risks are, I'm going to say, insignificant, but they're small enough that we don't consider them as putting yourself in harm, which is also forbidden according to Jewish law, but they're significant enough that we're not going to require you to start donating your kidney. Well, not start, you can only do it once. We're not going to require everyone to like go to the hospital and start donating kidneys. Rav Moshe Feinstein says something a little bit, I think just even more simply, which is that, the idea of donating an organ was pretty much unprecedented. Right? You can say money, but money as opposed to organs. Maybe you make the analogy and maybe you don't to say, well, your money is no better or worse than an organ. Right? But at the end of the day, they never said anything about donating an organ. And because that wasn't included, right, to impose that level of charity on someone that you have to give it, right? Because you've got a couple of different things. So you've got, the two sides are you allowed to and are you obligated to? And if we're going to say that you're obligated to, because otherwise you're violating Jewish law, you have to be pretty clear about that. And since organ donation wasn't mentioned earlier, again, largely because they didn't have it, then it's not enough for us to require you to start donating your kidney. Right? It seems that even though there may be a small risk, everyone's okay with it. So it's under that level of, sure, it's a really good idea, and people do recommend it, but we're not going to say you absolutely, positively have to. All right? Now, when we get to brain death and organ donation, this has been the subject of a pretty big debate. Anyone have any thoughts on, mentioned that you heard something earlier, anyone have any thoughts on like the brain death versus organ donation thing? Like, why are the two really related?
What's brain death?
Brain stem death.
Brain stem, yeah.
Is equivalent to whole brain death as far as what I've learned medically speaking.
Right, well.
So brain stem death basically means that you are not person.
Well, that works. Well, that's one approach. So there are a couple of things in play here. So when you're talking about donating a kidney, that's a little bit easier halachically, again, because the risk is relatively minimal. But what about a heart donation? Right? Because people donate hearts. You've got like a New York driver's license. Yeah. You have a thing that you check off on the back, right, about whether or not you're a donor. Here's where it gets really tricky. Donating a heart can save a person's life. Saving people's lives is really good. The problem is, when are you considered dead according to Jewish law? Mm. If you believe that brain death...
Don't they say decapitation?
One second. We'll get there. If you want to... Now, what is your brain... what is considered like really brain stem death? The truth is there are a few different criteria out there you can find. Actually, you know what? I will. Just give me a moment. I'll use the definition from... that I have on hose. Give me one moment here. Okay. All right, so we'll get to the... While I get this out, we'll hold off a second while I get this out. Donating a heart can save someone's life. Brain death would mean, let's say, just for the sake of argument right now, cessation of brain activity, or brain stem death. Right? So if that's considered halachically dead, then by taking a heart out of... someone whose brain stem death is like taking it out of a corpse and you haven't really done anything. But if it's not brain stem death, let's say it's heart death, right? That as long as the heart's still beating, you're considered alive according to Jewish law. Then when you take out the heart to donate it to someone else, you're actually committing murder. And that's pretty bad. So what I'm, the reason, even though this is a very, intense debate, it's not just a matter of being strict or being lenient. There are pretty significant consequences of life and death on either side. If you take one opinion, you can save someone's life. And if you take the other opinion, you're actually killing someone. You're committing murder, right? So stakes are pretty high for this one. The RCA has gone through a bit of a change with this. In source number 5 here, I put a link to a study that they did. It's over 100 pages. So if anyone's really interested in, a recent study, feel free to read it. It's got a lot of interesting footnotes. It's a little bit more argumentative in terms of a position paper than just a pure resource guide. Still, you know, it's a useful resource, again, just for the footnotes and bibliography. Here is the RCA's official position, and it's a decent summary. Lauren, could you read source number 4 here? This is the RCA's clarifies its stance regarding brainstem death in Jewish law from their website. The link is in the sources. Dated January 7th, 2011.
The recent release to our membership of the RCA Vat Halacha study on the issue of brainstem death has engendered strong reactions from many quarters. Because of the delicacy of halachic issues involved, and in the light of the extraordinary ramifications, we are taking the unusual step of issuing the following clarifications. The RCA takes no official position as an organization on the issue of whether or not brainstem death meets halachic criteria of death. The study disseminated by the Vat Halacha was the product of many years of exploration by that committee and was meant to serve as an informational guide to our membership.
Right. So officially, the RCA, again, no position, because they got a lot of flack over the thing that was put out. Again, links right below. Feel free to read it on your own. Also, you can check up online about, you know, the various stories that came up afterwards. So first, the RCA backtracks and says, we're not taking a stand. As an organization, individuals do. But the organization of the RCA doesn't have a stance.
It is true that many halachic authorities of our day, including Rav Herschel Schachter, Rav Mordechai Willig, Rav David Bleich,
J. David Bleich,
and others maintain that brainstem death does not satisfy the halachic criteria for determination of death. It is also true, however, that many other halachic authorities, including Rav Gedalia Schwartz, Rav Moshe Tendler, and Chief Rabbinate of Israel, maintain that brainstem death does qualify for the termination of death in Jewish law.
So basically, you can line them up. Some say yes, some say no.
In the light of this ongoing halachic dispute and out of respect for these various halachic authorities, the RCA maintains that its membership is best served by allowing each rabbi to determine for himself, based upon his own study, consultation with halachic authorities and his own conscience, which halachic position he will adopt in this extraordinarily difficult and important area of Jewish law.
Yeah, and along these lines, if there's anyone listening here, nothing in this class should really be treated as a psak halacha. If you think, I mean, I'm not sure if you would poskin like a brain death issue from one of my podcasts. If you do, you know, we have other issues. But, you know, this is, the point of what I try to do here is at least try to give some of the primary sources to explain what's, you know, the primary sources behind the big debate as, you know, much as possible. But nothing here is going to be an actual psak of here's what you absolutely have to do. Okay? Or not allowed to do. Yeah.
While debate continues over the issue of brainstem death, much greater consensus exists concerning the issue of organ donation. Almost all authorities maintain that organ donation under halachically permitted circumstances is not only allowed, but a mitzvah when such donations are applied towards saving the life of another. It should be noted, however, that those who do not accept brainstem death as meeting the halachic criteria for the determination of death will consequently be more limited in the cases of allowed organ donation.
You're right, and then they talk about postmortem corneal transplants being okay and whatchamacallit, kidney donations fine. So this is my card from the Halachic Organ Donor Society, and reads as follows on the back. I, Joshua Yuder, agree to donate my organs for the life-saving transplantation, not for research, and only after the option checked below. And what I've checked on mine is irreversible cessation of autonomous breathing that is confirmed by brainstem death. This is the position of the Chief Rabbinate of Israel. The other option is irreversible cessation of heartbeat. And in brackets, it explains from a medical perspective, this limits the number of organs that may be recovered. All preparations for transplant must be done consultation with my family-appointed rabbi. All medical procedures must be done with the utmost care, respect, and minimum damage to the cadaver. So in terms of the reason why one is, I guess, better than the other, is that with the brainstem death, the organs can still be more viable for transplantation while you're on the various machines and respirators. Whereas if you have to wait for heart death, then more other organs are going to fail, such that they won't be viable for transplantation. Right? So it's not that you can't. For example, if you're going to say that heart death is death, you're not going to be able to donate a heart. Right? and, you know, possibly some other, you know, organs as well. Okay, so let's go through some of the issues.
You can check either one on that card?
Well, before you order the card, like, you actually say which one. Right, the only reason why I did this was because, well, being a rabbi, I thought, you know, they could just add one more to the list. They also have, like, a really, you know, extensive list of rabbis who have gotten a card. They don't tell you which one they pick, though, on the back. Right, because you could pick the other one, but we'll talk about Hodza towards the end and some practical stuff at the end. So first, you know, how do we go about trying to parse out this really modern scientific innovation with ancient halachic texts? Right. I'll do source number 6. This is a Gemara on 29b.
It is forbidden to derive benefit from a corpse.
Mm-hmm. And do 7, Bava Batra 154a.
Okay. It happened at B'nai Brak that a person sold his father's estate and died. The members of the family thereupon protested that he was a minor at the time of his death. They came to Rabbi Akiva and asked whether the body might be examined. He replied to them, you are not permitted to dishonor him.
Okay, so this was a case where they weren't sure if the relative who sold it was a minor or not, so they wanted to check the body to see if at the time of the seller was a minor and if the sale was valid, and Rabbi Akiva said no, because you're not allowed to dishonor the corpse. Okay, so you can't dishonor a corpse, you can't derive benefit from a corpse. So we got two sources here. Let's stop for a moment. How would you think this would apply to organ donation, and would it be relevant or not?
Well, if you're saying that it's whole brain death, if you're saying that determination of death is based on brainstem death, then that's essentially a corpse.
Well, forget the definition. I mean, because these two would apply. These two would apply regardless of how you define halachic brain death.
Well, but I was saying if someone...
So let's say it'd be heart death,
right.
Too.
Just dead.
Right.
Just death.
Right. So we're all agreeing here that people die at some point, right? Just the question is when. So that here, right, you've got two things here. One is forbidden to derive benefit from a corpse. But if you take that person's heart or some other organ, aren't you benefiting from a corpse? Yeah. Right? And two, right, what about this issue of nivul, of like trying to dishonor a dead person? Like, you can't check to see if the person, certain age in terms of afterwards. And there are a whole slew of halacha regarding autopsies, right? So that would seem to, be an indicator that you would not be able to harvest any organ from a deceased person, no matter how you define deceased. But the obvious, response to that is simply, you're talking about cases here where you can save people's lives, right? It's not, and when you're talking about saving people's lives, you are allowed to break, pretty much any Jewish law, with the exception of the big three of idolatry, sexual immorality, and murder, which is where we get to where we are now. So, two sources that come up in terms of the discussion, and I know that this is a bit of an oversimplification, but these are the fundamental rabbinic texts that come up. First, we'll do one, Mishnah and Gemara in Yoma, that will seem to indicate the one criteria for when we consider someone to be dead. Shlomi, could you start us off? The first is the Mishnah, which is an earlier Tannaitic source, and this will help give us the context for the discussion in the Gemara.
If debris fell on someone and it is doubtful whether or not he is there, or whether he is alive or dead, or whether he be an Israelite or a heathen, one should open, even on Shabbos, the heap of debris for his sake. If one finds him alive, one should remove the debris, and if he be dead, one should leave him there until Shabbos day is over.
Right, so you're allowed to break Shabbat to save the life of a Jew. But it's save the life of a living Jew, not saving the life of a dead Jew, because a dead Jew is no longer alive. So, if you don't know, okay. If you don't know, then you err on the side of saving someone's life. But that leads to an interesting question. How do you know if someone's alive? Meaning, guy's under a collapsed building, you don't know whether or not you save him or not. So, continue. This is Gemara Yoma 85a.
Our rabbis taught, how far does one search? If the person buried under the debris gives no sign of life, at the point at which the debris may have been removed from him, until one reaches his nose, some say up to his heart. If one searches and finds those above to be dead, one must not assume those below are surely dead.
Mm-hmm.
Once it happened that those above were dead and those below were found to be alive, are we to say that these Tanaim,
which are the earlier rabbinic period,
dispute that the same as the following Tanaim For it was taught, from where does the formation of the embryo commence? From its head, as it is said, thou art that he took me. Gozi?
Yeah, it's a, they're doing a Hebrew pun here. That's why it's in the brackets.
Out of my mother's womb, and it is also said, cut off Gozi thy hair and cast it away.
I mean, there's a connection between the word Gozi and two different sources, so that's what the connection is. But the only reason I put this in is for the next paragraph to continue.
Abasal said, from the navel which it sends its roots into every direction.
And so the discussion here seems like, oh, you know, maybe this is actually a dispute because of how one defines when does like an embryo really form. It's really from the inside out. All right, but the reason why I put this in here for this next paragraph, continue.
You may even say that the first view is in agreement with Abasal, inasmuch Abasal holds his view only touching the first formation, because everything develops from its core, middle. But regarding the saving of life, he would agree that life manifests itself through the nose especially, as it is written, in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life.
Yeah, and last one?
Rabbi Papa said, the dispute arises only as to form below upwards. If the person under the debris has his feet up and his head down, according to one view, one must examine the core, in essence the heart. According to the other, even though the heart seems to have suspended action, the definitive diagnosis depends on the action or the failure of the function of the nose. But if from above downwards, one has searched up to the nose, one need not search any further, as it is said, in whose nostrils was the breath of life.
So according to the source, what is the halakha criteria for death?
Not breathing.
Right? Or, you know, depending on how the other opinion in terms of like cessation of the heart. But people, you know, are on respirators. Like, what does it mean, not breathing? According to that, they're technically breathing. They may be breathing with the assistance of machines, but they're still breathing. So it would seem, according, you know, if you're going to focus on this source, that lack of breath is going to be the real distinction. Yeah. Oh, I thought you had a question. No? No questions. All right. So that's one approach. Here's another one that's I heard from Rabbi Herschel Schachter. Several years ago, I think it was 2006, Yeshiva University's Medical Ethics Club held a conference on specifically organ donation, where, you know, Rav Schachter and Rav Tendler both spoke. Rav Schachter's argument, as I understood it, his primary argument for why brain death is not considered halachic death is kind of based on a seemingly unrelated halacha. Matt, can you take Nazir 21b?
Let my hand be a Nazirite, or let my foot be a Nazirite. His words are of no effect, but if he says, let my head be a Nazirite, or let my liver be a Nazirite, he becomes a Nazirite. The rule is, if the organ is one upon which life depends, he becomes a Nazirite.
So, yeah, don't feel bad if this is, like, a little bit strange and off topic. But it's a way of saying, when you have a certain vow about a Nazir, which we actually study in our Sunday class, there are a lot of different ways you can make this vow. One is like, I'm going, in theory, like, say, I, so-and-so, I'm going to be a Nazir. But there's also, if you name, say, you know, my organ, a certain organ is going to be a Nazir, if it's one of the vital organs, it is equated with your entire essence. So, for example, your foot is not a vital organ, right? So if you say, like, my foot's going to be a Nazir, that doesn't count. But according to here, it says, let my liver be a Nazir, or let my head be a Nazir. You can't live without a liver, or at least in the time of the Gemara. You can't live without a head, although that's a bad example here. I think Rambam lists about five other organs of vital organs. So Rav Schachter made the analogy that since each one of these vital organs is equated with the body as a whole, I mean the body total proper, then that would also apply halakhically in terms of death. Where in order for you to die halachically, according to Rav Schachter, every one of the halachically determined vital organs have to stop functioning, because otherwise, as long as one of them is functioning, it's still equated with the rest of the body functioning, no matter how it's functioning. People catch that logic? Not whether or not you agree with it, do you catch the logic? Okay. So those are, you know, some of the main sources that I've heard used that would oppose brainstem death as halachic death, and that we've got other criteria. And since today you can actually be kept, have the other organs working without, you know, brain activity, it's a pretty big deal. So where do we get the source for brain death? The big one that Rav Moshe Tendler lives quoting is Mishnah in Ohalot 1:6. Lauren? Lauren?
Oh, me?
Yeah, back to you.
A person cannot defile as a corpse until his soul has gone forth, so that even if he makes his arteries, even if he has his arteries severed, or even if he is in his last agonies, he still makes levirate marriage obligatory and liberates from levirate. What does that mean?
Zokalini putumini, but meaning these are the rules in terms of if someone's dead, does the wife have to marry his brother? The point is he's still alive, meaning, you know, there's a difference between life and death, but.
Yavam, isn't that what
Yibam. Right, and chalitza is when you get out of it.
Right, okay.
Bingo.
So it's called
and disqualifies surgery. So go to similarly.
Similarly, in the case of cattle or wild animals, they cannot defile until their soul has gone forth. If their heads have been cut off, even though they are moving convulsively, they are unclean. /moving. That is to say, like a lizard's tail which moves convulsively.
So based on this, what defines death?
Decapitation.
According to this, halachically, if an animal's head is removed, doesn't matter what else is going on in the body, that animal is considered dead. And he actually does have a video of an animal without a head that's hooked up to machines and has all of its organs working. He's an interesting guy. But the point is, it's there, and it's scientifically, medically, I'm not sure what the proper adjective is, but it certainly is possible to have a decapitated organism with every other, you know, organ functioning. And yet, according to this source, which is pretty explicit of when you're dead. Now, keep in mind, the one from Ohalot was like one certain type of check in an emergency situation. Obviously, like your head's still attached. But here, you know, would anyone say if you don't have a head, you're still alive? Then the real question comes into, is brainstem death like a decapitation, right? So Rav Tendler would say yes. From what I heard from Rav Tendler, there are actually tests you can do on the brain in terms of brain activity, such that when the brain stops working, apparently it disintegrates at a certain point. Medical people can, you know, correct me on that. And he says, once you're there, you are, for all intents and purposes, decapitated, where there is no difference between whether or not your head is attached or your head is not attached, because there's just an empty shell on top of your neck. So according to Rav Tendler, brain death is halachic death, primarily based on this particular source. Oh, but what about that Gemara that we saw in Yoma? Could you take the Rashi source number 11?
Sure.
You're right, yeah.
If he is like dead, that he does not move his limbs, how much must one inspect to determine the truth?
So with those three words in the Hebrew, im domela mate, if he is similar, if he is like dead, is how Rashi explains the question, how far do you check? And Rav Tendler, you know, argues that there's a very, what does this mean to be domela mate? What does it mean to be like dead? One of the things that really bothers Rav Tendler, I should, you know, point out here for those been here before. I'm not sure I know this, but actually, when I was at YU, I studied in Rav Tendler's class for 2.5 years, so this stuff came up every now and again. He had incredibly low tolerance for people who would have questions, or not have questions. He had a very low tolerance for people who try to give answers in the scientific sphere of Jewish law without knowing what they were talking about. As he put it once, he has a PhD in biology, I believe, from Columbia. And he said that he had, one of the things that annoyed him was he had to argue brain death with rabbis who never went to college. And trying to, you know, explain these things. He says, what is Nerolik mate? You go into a room, a hospital room, can you tell the difference between someone who's brain dead and someone who's in a coma? Right? Well, after a while, apparently, like maybe you can or can, I'm not sure, but that, there's a huge difference there in terms of Nerolik mate. What does it mean to seem like you're dead? Right? In the cases that you had in the Gemara and Yoma, in terms of, you know, whether or not you were breathing, people can seem like that they're dead, and people can seem like they're not dead. But if you know for certainly that they're dead, then this wouldn't be an issue. Right? So he also explains, you know, based on Rashi's explanation here, of nir'ek im domela mate, if you're similar to someone who's dead, and he would make up, you know, he would, you know, therefore give a distinction in terms of why that Gemara might not necessarily apply to your typical hospital situation. So it's really from these sources that you have a lot of the debate on not on organ donation. Well, not, I mean, the first case is organ donation in general, both for living, but also you know, organ donation is really tied to the question of brain death. Because that's going to determine whether or not people can take organs from you. Someone did, in fact, ask Rav Schechter at this event, given that, you know, according to him, taking out a heart would be murder, how could you then accept an organ donation? And he said very pragmatically, well, once the person's dead, you know, the person's dead. Like, you've taken out the heart, like, yeah, maybe you shouldn't have done it, but, well, he's dead anyway, might as well use it. And then you get into a whole bunch of other ethical questions about, you know, donating, giving, and not donating. And the literature on that is way too deep for anything I can get into now. But again, check the HODE's website for this. I'm not going to tell anyone what to do. I will say that having heard this enough times from a lot of different people, Rav Tendler's position convinced me. And not just because I was in his class for 2.5 years, you know, people know I've argued with him plenty, but I've heard everyone give their cases as best as possible. To me, Rav Tendler, I thought, made the best case. That's not me telling you to do it. The only thing that I would say is, if you are convinced that Rav Tendler's position is correct, that brainstem death is halachic death, then the only thing I will say is, in that case, you really ought to be an organ donor, because there's no reason why not. Although, you know, this, there's one question that does come up, and I know we haven't discussed it here yet, but almost every time I, you know, talk about organ donation, one question comes up in terms of tchiyat hametim, in terms of resurrection.
Isn't that the main concern or the main argument?
Not really. I mean, it's not so much a main, no one gives that I know, as a serious reason not to. But amongst people, rabbis don't make that distinction, laity do. And for laity, it's a huge issue. Even for people who aren't that observant, who aren't that religious, donating an organ because they believe somehow in resurrection something's going to happen, that is a big concern.
That's something that I grew up with.
Yeah, well,
for sure.
It's not just you. Every time I discuss it, it comes up. Right? Now, my answer to this is always, you know, getting resurrected is a pretty big miracle. God's going, you know, you're...
He's going to figure it out.
Not only is God going to figure it out, when you die, your organs are going to decompose. They're going to disintegrate. God's going to give you a new kidney anyway. What does it matter if it's exactly the same one reconstituted? Right? And if so, let's say you both wind up dying. Maybe that guy's going to get his original kidney and you'll get your original kidney. Right? It just seems really amusing that you can suspend disbelief enough to really believe in resurrection of the dead, but you're going to get hung up on a detail about, well, where's this organ? It's like, it's a miracle that transcends pretty much everything we know about nature and life. You can accept that. Deal with a missing organ, like that. Like, you can do that. You can get past the details.
Well, I think that's a big problem, though, for people that and superstition are two of the biggest reasons.
So I can dispel a bit of the superstition in that if you're believing in the miracle, it's going to be a miracle, right? Anyway, and again, your liver, your kidney, your heart are going to decompose when you die,
yeah.
Right? So God's going to have to reconstitute it. God will figure it out.
No, I mean, I get that.
It's not just
that,
you.
Like, that's a big issue for people, laymen, you know, people
sure.
that don't know.
But again, aside from that, if Rav Tendler's position, and, you know, take as much time as you have to do research on it, you know, look more detail, some pro, some con. If at any point you do get convinced, and it really only, and look, if, you know, Rav Schechter's position convinces you, not saying, you know, don't sign up for HODES, you know, just a little bit, you know, less of what you can do with that. But absolutely, certainly, if you agree with Rav Tendler, there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't be an organ donor. Provided you have, and something like HODES can ensure, you know, almost like a mini living will, like, you know, they're not just going to pull the plug too early. So I know that is also a concern of, like, you know, how you define actual brain death and what are the tests that you use, and, like, do you pull it too early? Do people come out of it? You know, those are, you know, more questionable details that, you know, the people of better backgrounds in science can get into the specifics on that.
I think it's also worth mentioning that, like, if, God forbid, someone does become brainstem death, the window of time between the time that they become brain dead and the time that their organs will not be useful anymore is mm-hmm. a very small window.
Right.
And a lot of people, I think, are under the impression that, like, oh, it can be months, it can be, you know, weeks. Like, it's really only a couple days that you have to, that, you know, that window of time to save, you know, 8 lives.
Could be. All right.
I that's what I wanted.
I'll take your word for that. But I, you know... you know, HODES would be a good website again to look at. You know, if you want to get the HODES card, get the HODES card. HODES.org, things on the back, and they've got a lot more literature again that I can provide. Any other questions?
Do you recommend getting that card instead of, like, getting it on your license?
I don't know. I mean, the reason why I got the HODES card as opposed to the license was because, you know, again, because I'm a rabbi and figured, you know, the more names they have in their list, the better it is for them. I guess the main advantage of having it on a card is that it does say that the preparations must be done in consultation with family-appointed rabbi, in the sense that, you know, or like consult the family type thing. There are more precautions here to make sure that the religious side is taken care of and that you've agreed, like, here's what you want to do, like you've expressed your wishes, but you're also making sure that, you know, there's at least some... and that it's not just done automatically, because if you, and here you're also giving a very specific definition of what brainstem death is. Whereas if you just leave it, oh, I'm an organ donor on your card, I don't know what the state definition is. And that might even vary from state to state. Whereas if you get the HODES card, you'll at least have a consistent, you know, halachic metric, whichever one you choose, with, you know, the caveat here of, you know, if there is a question, you know to call these people, but this is your ultimate intent. So those would be, I think, big advantages of getting the HODES card.
Can you get it on, like, can you sign it?
You most certainly can. That's what they do. See, it turns out to be a nice little commercial for HODES. but the thing is, you know, there are just so many stories out there of people who have been saved by transplants, mm-hmm. both in terms of the living organ donations. I know a couple of people personally. And also, unfortunately, after the deceased organ transplants, there's a better term for that. I remember, was it Elisa Flato, I believe, donated her organs years ago. Right. She was killed in a terror attack and made a pretty big, I think 7 of her organs were donated successfully. And that's, that case helped bring the discussion really to the forefront. And it's something which, I mean, look, just because you sign up to be an organ donor doesn't mean you are going to be an organ donor. There are quite a few people who live happy, healthy lives who die at a, you know, ripe old age of, say, 80, 90, at which point they're not taking your organs. All right. So, you know, it doesn't mean that people are just looking to scoop it out. It's just one of those, you know, conditional type of things there. All right.
I have one question.
Sure.
I'm sorry. All right. I'm dominating this. Is there a valid concern, or are there rabbis out there that say that this is, you know, halachically okay and agree with Rav Moshe Tamar, and then have a stipulation about whether or not the recipient of your organs is Jewish?
That's an interesting point. Rav Tedler, so first off, once you happen to be dead, there's not going to be that much of an issue to it because you're halachically dead. Rav Tedler actually had no problem donating organs to non-Jews. And he said that, in fact, there are quite a few Jews who would only donate to Jews. And he said that's led to a problem where, in terms of, like, transplant lists. Like, for example, it becomes known that, oh, this person's Jewish, they only receive, they don't give. And problems that cause down the road, the broader scheme of things. Be it Chil Hashem, be it Eva, be it, you know, inadvertently causing another Jew down the road not to get a transplant because Jews have the reputation of not giving to non-Jews. So in terms of can you give that stipulation, legally, I'm not a lawyer, but let's say you drop your own legal will, your own living will, which is a legal document, I don't see why you couldn't include there any provision that, you know, you don't want. I mean, you could put in there, you know, don't give my kidney to a black person. Right, legally they may have to abide by it, even though it's crazy racist.
I mean, like, halachically, like, I think legally that would. I mean, I guess you could do it, but I think hospitals would not receive that so well.
Well, whether or not they receive it, I mean, a document's a document. You know, like, you sign up whatever criteria that you have. Halachically, though, Rav Tedler had no issue with an organ going to a non-Jew.
I heard of an organization recently, actually, that was started by two family members, I think it's like two cousins, and one was intended to donate to the other, but it wasn't a match, and they started an organization that's all donation-based, one of these lists, so that even if it's not you directly, you're donating, and whoever the recipient is, the partner or whatever, can find a match, basically, in this pool.
So, interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of like an interesting, cool solution take on it. So.
There are also a whole slew of other halachic and ethical issues, like selling organs, but that's well beyond our thinking. Anyway, so that's it for tonight. Have a great night. Our Sunday class this week is going to be on Minhag, the role of custom in Jewish law. So if you've ever had a question about that, be here this morning at 9 a.m. I forget what's on the schedule for next week, but keep up with me on Facebook and the show list. Our show in-laws will have it. All right. Have a great night.